doing the whole 6010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Hello and welcome into Fantasy Focus Football. It is Monday, September 18th. Today's show is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico. All, see all the ways that you could save. Also, check out our friends over at Trophy Smack if you want to get a belt for your fantasy league. Use the code FOCUSBELT for 10% off. I am here. My name is Daniel Dopp with Mike Clay and Field Jace. Recapping week two, guys.
And did you know that if you enter the promo code PUKA at TrophySmack.com, you get 100% off because you're guaranteed to win your fantasy football championship.
That's how it works.
That's right. We all predicted this, right? I mean,
yes.
Just nailed preseason expectations on Puka Nacua.
Well, people do recall both the second after the draft was over, we talked about this extensively, and then during the quiet period after the draft, after OTAs, leading into late July, we also talked about Puka Nacua on every show.
And every then show.
We talked about it every day during the preseason as well. Mm-hmm. So you could say that maybe we gave it just the right amount of attention, or perhaps not enough, because he's the best player in fantasy football, apparently.
You remember when Carolina made that trade with Chicago to move up to the first overall pick? We were like, oh, it's for Puka Nacua.
Right.
We just assumed they didn't go that direction, but look, we can't all be perfect GMs. We were on it. No one else was, but hey,
that's right.
Look, hopefully you have him on your roster.
We got a really big show today, a full recap of all the games from Sunday for week two. Plus, we're going to dive into a bunch of injuries that happened a little bit later on in the show. But first, guys,
bad injury day. We'll dive into all of that because it was a bad injury day for some notable superstars.
Let's talk about really quickly. What was your favorite thing that just happened this week on Sunday? Do you have one thing that
favorite
stood out?
Thing that happened on Sunday that stood out? I mean, I was trying to think. I thought that was going to be a way for you to talk about something with the Lions. Unfortunately, they lost a game in overtime.
So I was going to say the Lions.
If you guys could wait for a second, I'm just trying to talk to America right now. If you just wait,
that was what it was.
All right,
okay.
There we go.
I see what you were trying to say.
You know, Samantha, that was hilarious.
Great. That
was
really good. Very funny.
Either that or it was Bill Belichick spiking the challenge flag right in front of the referee.
Actually, both coaches were on one last night. So Belichick had the red flag spike, which is just like every single time he does it, like it would have been fine if it was once. And then now he just like took it and threw it on the field like every other coach. And then Mike McDaniel at halftime. Did you see this?
Oh, that was so good.
So Mike McDaniel is always the case. You know, you've got a cameraman following the coach into the locker room. The cameraman starts to jog as Mike McDaniel is jogging. And all of a sudden, McDaniel, with a look right in the eyes of the cameraman, just zips ahead and starts sprinting. McDaniel, by the way, a former college receiver at Yale. So he's got some wheels, too. But those two are both very funny in very different ways.
Very different ways. All right, we got a lot to get into. So we're just going to jump right into our recap. And honestly, we already started with it. Puka Nacua has been absolutely unreal. To be honest, these Rams had two guys you picked up off of waivers, and they absolutely crushed it for you this week, Field, in Puka Nacua and Kyren Williams. I'm not sure it's going to get much better for either of these two guys.
It might be four guys off waivers, because it could be Stafford, Atwell, Nacua, Kyren Williams. I mean,
this is the story of fantasy football right now. Puka Nacua by himself, to me, is the singular story that leads the way in fantasy football in the early portion of this season. Yep. Obviously, we did not talk about Puka Nacua nearly enough during the offseason. He has been absolutely unbelievable. I'm not sure who could have seen this coming, though, other than perhaps the Rams themselves. And yet, I don't even think they would have guessed that this was the likely outcome for Puka Nacua. No. When they lost Cooper Kupp, we asked the question, how can the Rams offset the loss of Cooper Kupp? And we were thinking to ourselves, if they can find one receiver who's solid during Cooper Kupp's absence, they'd be in business. Instead, they literally found Cooper Kupp.
Yep.
I mean, it is absolutely absurd what Puka Nacua has done. We are at the point now. He's got 35 targets in two games. 35 targets. He had 15 in week one, and we were like, well, it's all downhill from here. Until he got 20 7 days later. The efficiency is off the charts as well, as he had 15 catches yesterday. By the way,
they
two rushing attempts.
Team too, right? They played a really easy
defense.
Yeah,
they played basically the 85 Bears, the 49ers.
The 49ers!
So, like, this is absolutely unbelievable. We were having this conversation, partially in jest, but partially in not before the show. If you are in a 16-team league, especially one where half the teams make the playoffs, which is how a couple of 16-team leagues that I play in, they are set up. It's possible that being the lowest scorer in week one could end up being a silver lining for you, because while you took the L in week one, you have added a player that for at least 4 weeks, I guess 3 weeks because you didn't have him in week one, is potentially a top 10 wide receiver until Cooper Kupp returns.
Yeah.
We can talk about what happens when Cooper Kupp returns at a later time, Mike, but this guy's the real deal.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was just thinking, you're right. How do we not rank him top 10 this week? Yeah, we have to.
You have to.
He has a 40% target share.
49ers.
Like, yeah, 40% target share. Now, I think the modern era record is like 39%. Brandon Marshall, like, he's not going to stay at that level. Also, the Rams are first in offensive snaps, so that's going to come down a little bit, but it doesn't matter. Even if he has a 25% target share, it's a guy that can be a wide receiver one. Right now, there are two players, quarterbacks, including quarterbacks, two players with 50-plus fantasy points this season.
Yep.
One is Tyreek Hill. The other is Puka Nacua, and Nacua has zero touchdowns.
Yes.
He's doing it without touchdowns. Yes.
And Tyreek Hill obviously is great, but the difference between Puka Nacua's 50-plus points and Tyreek Hill's 50-plus points is that Tyreek Hill had 44 and a half of them in week one.
Yeah.
He had a terrible, awful week two with only 15 fantasy points.
Yeah.
Did Tyreek Hill. Bill Belichick factor. But it's just the story of fantasy football. I know that I would have loved if I had been talking about Puka Nacua all offseason and been hyping him up and looked like the biggest genius in the world right now. At the same time, this to me is what keeps me coming back for more in fantasy football. I draw the parallel to the NCAA tournament every year, right? This is the 15 seed that all of a sudden is playing in the Sweet 16, and you're like, how on earth did that just happen?
Yeah.
That's Puka Nacua. It's amazing. If you got him off waiver wires in week one in a fab system and you spent 85% of your fab on Puka Nacua, that might have been 15% too little. It might have been a discount by 15%.
And there are also them leagues too, like keeper leagues or dynasty, where you had them had this guy in the end of your bench. This could be a game changer for the next half decade or decade, especially if you're in a keeper league where you kind of like next year you move up two rounds based on where you took him. So if you took him in the 16th round, you get him for a 14th next year, 12th next year,
10th year after that.
It's like Justin Jefferson was kind of like that a few years ago. So who knows? I mean, he's a fifth round pick. He's not a sure thing to be a star.
And Cooper Kupp's role will obviously influence his output when he gets back.
I'm interested to see how that works out because we saw both Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods have fantasy value in this offense not that long ago, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing well. They have Sean McVay. Matthew Stafford looks good. I mean, by all accounts, they could support two receivers.
And Kyren Williams looks fantastic at the running back position. Cam Akers, a healthy scratch yesterday.
And I think his days are done in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to, like, I hate being the toot-your-own-horn guy in fantasy football. There's way too much of it. Like, our job is to try to get things right. We do it as much as we can. I don't need to tell you what I got right and got wrong all the time. We miss plenty of things. We hopefully hit on plenty of things. But I had serious concerns about Cam Akers coming into the season because basically you were drafting a player who down the stretch last season hit like peak efficiency as a runner with minimal usage as a receiver. And he was being drafted as like a top 24-ish running back this year. He's out of the rotation by week two. This is a player who was in the doghouse last year. His days are done. And Kyren Williams, he was playing way more snaps in week one when it mattered, Mike. He played way more snaps yesterday because obviously Cam Akers was out. Mm-hmm. But it's not like anybody got any work besides Kyren Williams. He might be a rare workhorse back.
Yeah, 78 snaps for this offense in week two. He played 75 of them. That is a massive number.
Massive.
Running backs do not play 70, even 60, even 50 snaps. It's unheard of.
Unless you're Christian McCaffrey.
And even, Williams. Yesterday he played all their snaps, but they were under 60 snaps yesterday. So it's just rare to play that number of snaps. I just didn't trust Ronnie Rivers or Royce Freeman in this game. He's been a top 10 scorer in both weeks one and week two. He's the number two overall scoring running back this season. Not a lot of rushing production, exactly 52 yards in both games, but he has the four touchdowns. He's getting the goal line work and a big boost in receiving work in week two. 10 targets. Kyren Williams, again, much like Nacua, how do we not rank him top 10 in week three? I don't know how we don't with this usage.
Right around there, especially because there are a couple of like fringy top 10 backs coming into the season who are either hurt, like Aaron Jones, we'll see if he plays, or guys that haven't necessarily like hit their stride, like Ramondre Stevenson, who's been fine but not spectacular. Like Kyren Williams has been the real freaking deal.
All right, let's talk about these Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen bounced back in a major way, which is what we were expecting for fantasy managers. Yeah. Like, this is who Josh Allen is, right? Mm-hmm. That's not really the conversation here.
I just thought it was such a ridiculous week of narrative surrounding Josh Allen and the Bills. Like, I don't know why they're such an easy target other than the fact that they played like crap in the playoffs last year. I get it. It was one terrible game. But like, think about his prior playoff losses. The one the year before when he played a perfect game against the Chiefs and lost because Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes are built, they were literally built just in a lab incredible. On a different planet, by the way.
Yeah.
But just a reminder just how absurdly good Josh Allen is and why I still think he has as much upside as any quarterback in fantasy every single week. He scored what he did yesterday. I think he's quarterback 6 right now. Yes, he is at 23.7 fantasy points. With 2 rushing attempts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So he did this without the use of his legs, in part because, Mike, they finally committed to our guy, James Cook.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And he's up to eighth in fantasy points at running back this season with zero touchdowns. So it's been all about his production, his efficiency. And there were actually some concerns early in this game because he was deferring work to Latavius Murray and Damien Harris.
I didn't love that.
Well, by the way, both scored touchdowns.
James Cook
is not this season. That could limit Cook's upside, but he played well, 29 carries and 10 targets this season, had 159 yards from scrimmage, still played 58% of the snap. So if you took a shot on James Cook, who we probably undervalued a little bit throughout draft season, he started to move our way up our rankings late in the offseason as he established himself as the one, looks like it's going to pay off. I'd say worst case scenario, RB2 going forward.
If we knew that he was going to get this kind of workload, though, I feel like he would have been up our draft boards a little bit higher. Part of that is the passing game usage, because we hadn't seen a Buffalo Bills running back at the passing game usage we wanted.
He did steadily climb, though.
He did.
He definitely steadily climbed.
Yeah. He did, and concerns about goal line work are playing themselves out. Latavius Murray and Damien Harris have stolen some of that work.
Guys, Anthony Richardson looked unreal yesterday.
Could be the story of fantasy.
Seriously, could be, unfortunately.
If not for Puka Nacua.
Seriously, without that, I'm not sure. Is Anthony Richardson the second best rookie in the game right now because Puka's number one?
Yes.
Bijan's there.
I forgot about Bijan Robinson.
We could do a whole thing on Bijan today.
Anthony Richardson, though, looked fantastic. Unfortunately, left with a concussion, which you don't love. But even before doing that, guys.
Yeah.
He had 17.7 fantasy points, 3 carries, 35 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Ridiculous. And by the way, one of the touchdown runs was a designed quarterback draw. You love to see that. That's the second time he scored in a designed quarterback play. Draw. Yep. Second one was a scramble, which is where he ended up getting hurt on. He ran into the end zone, was getting tackled as he goes into the end zone. Back of the head ricochets off the ground. He ends up obviously now in the concussion protocol. Jim Mersey said he was clear-headed after the game. I'm not going to put a timeline on this one, but if Anthony Richardson is back, or when he's back, we have ourselves a player that might be a top 10 fantasy option because this quarterback rushing ceiling is so ridiculous, Mike, and the floor is so high. I am not going there yet myself, but this is funny. I think I said this on the podcast recently. I've got Anthony Richardson on 3 teams, and he sits behind in those leagues. I misspoke the last time. Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and then I've got a salary cap league where I've got him. He does not sit behind, but I've got him and Jared Goff and Kenny Pickett on very, very, very small contracts. Yesterday, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, did I make the mistake starting Patrick Mahomes over Anthony Richardson?
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, though, is that if you took Anthony Richardson as your only quarterback, that's already paid off, Mike. Mm-hmm. If you took him as the second quarterback, you may have yourselves potentially the most valuable trade chip in fantasy right now.
Yeah, and what's unreal is he's already delivering as a QB1. He missed the end of week 1.
Yep.
He could have added another. They were at the goal line when he went out. He could have scored another touchdown, and he missed 2/3 of week 2.
Yeah.
So think about where he could easily be the #1 scoring quarterback right now had he stayed healthy. The health is a little concern.
Totally.
He's been hurt in both games. He's going to run a lot. That is that bothers me a little bit. But the fact is, when he's been on the field, not only is he just doing damage as a rusher, which we expected, they're throwing the ball. They're one of the, I think they're 8th pass heaviest so far in terms of game script adjusted passing. So if he keeps throwing the ball, keeps scrambling, keeps running, keeps scoring touchdowns, the guy's going to be a strong QB1 all season long.
Mike, we faded Colts running backs in week 1, or hopefully we faded Colts running backs in week 1. But here in week 2, Zach Moss looked like the real deal. Is he someone that you think that we should be looking at as a potential flex player, or someone in our fantasy lineups going forward?
Again, sometimes you just have to chase the usage and volume. He played 55 of their 56 offensive snaps.
That's a lot. 55
snaps, 98%, 18 carries, 4 targets. Actually, the targets was second most on the entire team. It wasn't a big high volume game, and played well. He had over 100 yards on 22 touches and a touchdown in the game. I think they're just going to run him into the ground for the next couple weeks until Taylor is back.
Yeah.
Available on waivers, by the way, too. And I got there are people that were adding him last week. I thought, wisely so. And it was one of those where when you're adding Zach Moss off of waivers, it's not like we're telling you this is a player that you're adding and he's going to immediately change the complexion of your team. Rather, it's how often do you have a guy who's probably going to be the starting running back until Jonathan Taylor returns available in 80% of leagues after week 1? I get it. He hadn't played, but still, why not roll the dice there? That week 2 roll the dice certainly paid off.
Now available in 68% of ESPN fantasy leagues.
Yeah. That number was way higher after at the beginning of last week.
Certainly was. All right, we're going to keep on going down with our week 2 recap. But first, Fields Yates, we're going to pay some bills.
Yeah, we are, Daniel, because you know why? Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance?
I would love it.
Of course you guys would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help, like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact our local agent today.
We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on the NFL action with great offers every single game day. New customers can bet $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Throw five down on any of this week's epic matchups to walk away an instant winner. And DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of two new offers every game day this September. Football is more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with code FFF. New customers can bet just $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. With code FFF, the crown is yours.
Have you ever dreamed of hitting the
gambling
road?
Problem field?
My bad. Keep
That's
going,
all right.
Daniel.
Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 100GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. Licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles in Louisiana. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. See sportsbook.com. Sportsbook.DraftKings.com/football terms for eligibility terms and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply.
Go Field.
All right.
It's your turn.
Have you ever dreamed of hitting the road in your very own customized Mercedes-Benz Sprinter?
I have, yes.
Yeah, following the college football season all along, hitting all the biggest games in college's most celebrated stadiums? Of course you have. At ESPN, we dreamed that dream, and with the help of Mercedes-Benz, we made it happen. This year, our very own Jen Latta has teamed with Mercedes-Benz designers to create a road-ready, fully functional, state-of-the-art podcast studio on wheels. The ride is pure Mercedes-Benz with all-wheel drive and the latest driver assistance safety and tech. The podcast studio must be seen and heard to be believed. A spacious and chill conversation space with mics, camera, and a mixing board to capture the action. On board, Jen Latta will be interviewing some of the biggest names in college football, and points to Mercedes-Benz for always bringing some extra. Out back of this Sprinter, they're innovating, pushing the science of the tailgate, complete with grill, cooler, TV monitors, and more. This sounds amazing.
Sounds
This is hashtag van life meets the fan life. To get an inside look how this one-of-a-kind, blow-your-mind collaboration came together, visit mbvans.com/sprinterlabs. The Mercedes-Benz ESPN College Football Podcast Sprinter, coming soon to a game near you.
All right, back here on Fantasy Focus, recapping Week 2, Field Yates, Mike Clay, and Daniel Doppin. Guys, the Milwaukee Bucks are two Milwaukee Bucks. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Did you really just say that?
You want to know what it is? I looked at Field's green shirt, and
it
I was thinking
quite green.
And I was thinking, all of a sudden, Milwaukee just popped into my head. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 2-0 after beating not only Minnesota in Week 1, but Chicago in Week 2.
Yeah.
Mike Evans looks unreal through two weeks, Field. We had this conversation leading into draft season. Could Mike Evans be one of those guys like DK Metcalf was last year? That just keeps falling down that draft board, and there's going to be value for you in your fantasy lineup. I'm telling you right now, it looks like that's coming true.
Early return certainly seemed pretty good, right? Back-to-back weeks with a touchdown for Mike Evans, back-to-back weeks with six catches for Mike Evans, and he exploded yesterday. He had a 70-yard catch plus a long touchdown. He has looked tremendous so far, and while there were some discouraging signs last year from this Bucs offense on the whole,
they just needed Baker Mayfield.
Apparently, yeah. Mike
quarterback
Evans,
upgrade.
You know, this is a player who legitimately is he's a Hall of Fame player, right?
Yes.
Like he will be in the Hall of Fame one day. And while he's already nine seasons deep into his career, the gas tank is not empty yet for Mike Evans. So yeah, this is looking like one of the best values already in fantasy football. And the Bucs have this thing that not a lot of teams in the AFC have. And I'm not trying to discredit them in any way because they have beaten two teams, including the Vikings, which was a formidable team from last year. The schedule is just different for some of these NFC teams, right? Like you're not facing, like I was looking at the Jets and Patriots schedules right now, two teams who lost yesterday. And it's like, oh, the Jets, they play each other next week. But then the Jets, it's like, oh, then you go play the Chiefs. The Patriots, I think, go Jets Cowboys over the next 2 weeks. Like it's just hard when you're playing against elite defenses every single week. That's not exactly the case for this Bucs team who they are 2-0. They get props for that. But like, look at the upcoming schedule over the next few weeks.
And this is a whole division. We talked about this in the offseason. This light schedule for this division is not
totally
a surprise.
Yeah, so it's just a little bit different. Like, these next couple weeks will be a good challenge for them. Philadelphia on Monday Night Football next week will be a good test. Will James Bradbury be there? We don't know. He's been in concussion protocol, obviously. And then this Philly defense has not been nearly as dominant as it was last season. So still TBD on how tough the schedule is for the Bucs. This could be looking like one of the better values in all of fantasy, Mike.
Yeah, he's been great. The number 13 scoring receiver in week one. It is appropriate. Yes. That's the number, of course. And then he'll finish top 10 in week two, of course. The only thing that caught my eye was he only played 59% of the snaps in week two. But he did play 84% week one, so nothing I'm really concerned about.
Was that because the game got out of hand, you think? I wonder.
I don't know. It might have been that. I think it was throughout the game, though. He was in and out. So it's nothing that I'm concerned about right now.
So hot yesterday.
Yeah.
I saw that. Like, Sarah Walsh, who, former colleague of ours at ESPN, was down there covering the game, was like, listen, we're from Florida. It's always hot. She was like, it is atypically hot today down in Tampa. I bet they were being conservative
because
of that
management.
Seriously.
Nothing wrong with that.
So not worried. Yeah, he's looking like a good wide receiver too at worst right now. Yep.
What about Rashad White, Mike? He was a little disappointing for us in week one, although we got a lot of volume in week one. That volume continued here in week two.
Yeah, volume's king, and that's why, you know, we talked about it on FF Now yesterday. I was sticking with him. He was in my DFS lineup because of the volume he was seeing. Played 74% of the snaps, had 17 carries for 73 yards and a touchdown, and had caught all five targets for 30 yards as
That.
He's up to 13th in fantasy points this season. He had 19 touches in week one. He had 22 touches in week two. By all accounts, he has locked down that number one job. Maybe that changes at some point if he struggles, but for now, there's no reason to think that's the case.
You nailed two calls. You nailed a lot of calls this past week, Mike, but you were bullish on both Rashad White and Brian Robinson being in very good spots this week. We'll talk about Robinson later on in the show, but good job by you. As always, trust Mike Clay.
Field, I was bullish on Zay Jones this week, so I'm going to let you talk about Christian Kirk while I sit this one.
Yeah, so Zay Jones got hurt, though, right?
He did.
What are you going to do? He got hurt early
in
the game. He ended up returning to the game a little bit later, but by the time he returned, it had become the Christian Kirk show, and a little bit of a reminder here that while Christian Kirk evaporated in week one, he's very talented. I mean, he had a monster season last year, and yesterday had a monster week as well. 14 targets, 11 receptions, 110 yards for Christian Kirk, good for nearly 22 fantasy points. He did have minus four rushing yards here. Maybe it was something like that, but whatever. 21.96 fantasy points for Christian Kirk. I think the question about this is actually less about, like, all right, I'm convinced now that Christian Kirk all of a sudden has a role that's fantasy relevant and Zay Jones is not. More on a day in which Calvin Ridley was held to two catches for 32 yards is the big takeaway that maybe this Jaguars offense is what we wondered it could be during the offseason, which is that it's kind of like San Francisco light.
Yes.
You've got a lot of really good players that not everybody's going to feast every single week, Mike.
So we were talking about this via text yesterday, and why did Christian Kirk blow up? Did it have to do with Zay Jones' injury? And yes, Zay Jones only played 64% of the snaps. He disappeared for a while from the game and then came back. But Kirk, as you pointed out, was established. He ended up having a season high in snap share, no surprise. But what was interesting to me is I went back to before Zay Jones got hurt. And by the way, Zay Jones did not have a catch. He had two near touchdowns where they were both close calls.
Right.
Yep.
The snap shares between these three guys, Ridley, Kirk, and Zay, was almost equal. In fact, Ridley was coming off the field more than Zay and Christian Kirk early in
this
game.
As well. Seriously.
Yes, and then late in the game, a kind of a similar thing. But it would not shock me at all if that continued. Jamal Agnew was worked into this throughout the game. It wasn't just when Zay Jones was out. Throughout the game, he was worked in the fourth receiver. So, yeah, I think what you said is exactly right. I think we're going to have a little bit of a boom-bust nature. We saw that last year, and that was without Calvin Ridley handling a 20 to 27% target share.
Right.
So I'm not shocked, actually, the way they're using guys that Ridley had a down game. That might happen. Maybe we were a pinch too high in him, and maybe he's more like a good RB or a good wide receiver two, not a certified wide receiver one.
If you're mad at me for expecting this to be a shootout, that's allowed. I thought this was going to be a shootout.
I did too.
Defensive struggle. Wow.
Really was.
What's up with Patrick Mahomes basically not looking like the Patrick Mahomes that you drafted as the number one quarterback in the very beginning of the second round?
Could that have been the Heat too? I think Damian mentioned that in FF Now yesterday. That's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
They were in Jacksonville, right?
The Heat was crazy there yesterday. Yeah. The amazing part about Mahomes is that he's had back-to-back uninspiring games, and he's still got 20-plus fantasy points on both of them. The secret sauce of Patrick Mahomes this season right now is his legs. He's been running a ton. That Chiefs offensive line, which spent big money this offseason to acquire Juwan Taylor and then some money on Donovan Smith, they can't pass protect right now.
Did Taylor get benched? Did I?
Briefly, yes. They took him off for a little bit of time. All those false start penalties that he was not called for in week one piled up in week two.
Finally came in week two.
He had two holdings in like a span of three plays. They can't pass protect.
I'll tell
right
you
now.
What, though. That's one of them guys that you I struggle with in the offseason because the NFL's perception of him based on the amount he's being paid is way different than all metrics like pass block win rate, run block win rate, PFF grades. Sure. Atrocious.
Yeah.
Is that right? His career? Atrocious. So
a couple of things.
What, yeah. Sometimes players like that pop up and you're like, what?
Plays every snap.
Yeah.
Every snap for a guy until yesterday. A guy that came into the NFL with knee concerns plays every snap. And the other thing is that like, if you were to just like the traits are pretty unique. He's got like such quick feet. He's firing off the ball fast, apparently too fast sometimes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But there are some really interesting traits for Juwan Taylor that if you're the Chiefs, you're probably saying to yourself, in our system, it'll work more so than it did in the Jacksonville system.
Right.
But Mike, you're right. It does seem like, I feel like in basketball or baseball, this comes up a lot where it's like the difference between like the analytics approach versus like the eye test approach doesn't rear itself quite as frequently in football, but this might be a good example of it.
Yeah, it is.
There's your offensive line talk on Fantasy Focus for the day.
We should have brought Woody in for that.
All right, let's talk about Geno Smith and the Seahawks. Guys, the Seahawks team looked really good on offense last night.
You can walk away.
This hurt me, but I want to say this. In watching this game, Geno Smith was being pressured the entire game, but they did a really good job of finding ways to get the ball out early, and Geno was able to step up, break containment, use his legs, keep drives alive. He looks really good here this week, Mike, against a Lions defense that was giving him a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and sometimes guys have duds, and that happens in week one, and we overreact to it. It looks like Geno's back. It looked just like last season. He also had 20 rushing yards, to your point.
Yep.
320 passing, 2 touchdowns, got Tyler Lockett back on track. And DK Metcalf came back, but again, he was out for a while, much like Zay Jones. He got hurt, missed some time.
Early,
So a nice bounce back game here from Geno Smith.
Again, Mike, more the analytic guy than I am, but the Seahawks improved to 1-0 this season when Jake Bobo catches a pass.
That's right.
Good point.
So, I was thinking
of you when that happened.
He was established as the fourth receiver in this game, as you pointed out, he would, but he got some extra run with DK out of the game. So,
but again, have they ever lost a game in which he has caught a pass?
No, I mean, I can't argue with that. 100% win rate.
Thank you. 100%.
I still want that jersey. My cousin sent me a link to a place where you could get a customized Jake Bobo throwback jersey. And it looks so shady that I was like, I guarantee that if I put my credit card down in this website, like I'm going to get maybe a Jake Bobo jersey, but I'm definitely going to have like $25,000 charged to Taco Bell next week.
Yeah.
Somehow.
It's only $29.
I don't even know if I have $25,000 available on my credit card. Yeah.
That's tough. These Lions game was tough, though. I think the weather, it was really hot there, and the weather probably affected him, which is why they lost.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that's our excuse.
The AC was busted last week. Yeah,
that's it. The rest of the season, if we're high on someone and they disappoint, it was too hot.
It was too hot.
It could be like December 30th.
Green Bay, it's like negative 27. It's like A.J. Dillon had only 17 rushing yards.
Yeah. He was on the sideline. Those heaters were on his back. It just messed him up.
Speaking of heaters, Brian Robinson is on a heater himself.
That's awesome. Yeah,
here in week two, looked unreal. Field Yates.
I would let Mike take this one because he was all over it.
You're right, Mike. Let's let you do this.
Yeah, just based on usage in week one, it carried over to week two for the most part. The snap share between he and Gibson was actually a lot closer, 36-30, but had a great rushing line, still at 18 carries, 87 yards, 2 touchdowns. Also, 3 more targets. He equaled Gibson in targets again.
Yeah, baby.
They are splitting passing down work, and Robinson is getting almost all the carries and the goal line work. He's the number 3 scoring fantasy running back this season. He was number 1 in week 2, or so far he's number 1 in week 2. Just Gibson hasn't produced. Robinson has been the guy. So, he's a must-start right now.
Yeah, it's crazy to me, and this can just be a me thing. Do you remember when we were told many years ago that Antonio Gibson was the second coming of Christian McCaffrey?
Yep,
I remember that, Daniel. And I remember being mad about it, and then I decided to change my mind. I got stuck in groupthink.
And then Eric Bieniemy came here, and I was like, you know what? Maybe they're going to use Antonio Gibson in a way that they never
did
before.
Maybe he can be Dylan McCaffrey, one of the other McCaffrey brothers.
Well, they are kind of using him like Jerick McKinnon. That's what we thought might happen.
Low usage Jerick McKinnon.
Yeah, it's like he's not getting a lot of touches, but he almost had a touchdown. He had a vertical target and almost scored a touchdown in this game, and that's kind of how McKinnon is used. So that's
so
what they're deploying.
By the way, how many horses, Rosie said this, how many horses does it take to catch a football? Apparently at the end of the game, it took 3 of them. On that tip drill, by the way, for the record.
I did not know what you were asking when you said that at first. Now I know.
Know where it was
that would have been wild if they had had that 2-point conversion. Not that it matters.
It was definitely pass interference.
100%.
I don't know what DPI is anymore because it just never gets started.
But that was definitely DPI.
That was definitely DPI.
No question.
All right. Field Yates, Mike Clay, Daniel Dopp here on Fantasy Focus, making our way through the week 2 recap.
It's time for some therapy.
It's so weird. I've been watching Albert Haynesworth throw passes to Ja'Marr Chase for what seems like 2 weeks now. And I don't understand it. What's going on with Joe Burrow? That was a guy made too much money joke, in case you didn't catch up on that.
Joe Burrow, who, by the way, said he's getting treatment for his calf after the game. So we should incorporate that. But Mike talked yesterday about how he has had bad week ones in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He also has had less than inspiring week twos. It was a little better yesterday, but like, put aside the Ravens defense for a second, because they were without Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Williams. Like, this is not the personnel that you're expecting to dominate Joe Burrow. And by the way, he's got the best or second best receiving trio in the NFL with a capable running back. 15.38 fantasy points for Joe Burrow. I don't have a good excuse other than he does not look right. Maybe that calf is lingering much more than we realized, Mike, but I think it's a reasonable panic point right now. I mean, you're going to have to keep starting him if he starts, most likely, but gosh, he's got to be one of the most underwhelming players in fantasy so far.
Yeah, check this out. One quarterback has made two starts this season and is under 20 total fantasy points.
Wow.
It is Joe Burrow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No
Unbelievable.
Way.
Unbelievable. Who would have thought that would be the case?
I wonder his second fewest fantasy points beyond...
I don't know. Probably not Josh Dobbs anymore. He was good. No, I mean, he had a good first half yesterday. He ran for a touchdown.
He had 25 fantasy points.
Yeah, he was great. 9-8 in the first one. So we had 26 total between the 2 weeks then.
I don't know who's next up to start of two games. But yeah, it's been unreal. Check this out. Last year in the regular season, Joe Burrow had 75 carries, 257 yards, and 5 touchdowns. That was a big part of his vault up into the elite in fantasy.
Yeah.
So far in two games, 2 carries, 4 yards. This was my concern in the offseason with this injury was... that he was not going to run, much like Justin Herbert didn't run last year when he was not 100%. And so far, that has been the case through 2 weeks. So on top of the passing production, the touchdowns not being there, they didn't score a touchdown until, what, the third quarter in that game?
They had a special teams touchdown.
Yes. Yeah, they didn't score an offensive touchdown. Yeah. Their first touchdown of the offensive touchdown of the season, I believe, was in the third quarter. So it was rough, and he's not rushing on top of it.
Let's talk saving grace, though.
Mild concern.
Yeah. Let's talk about saving grace. Next few weeks, opportunity here to throw the football effectively, right? See, I got the Rams next Monday night.
Sure do.
At the Titans, you can throw on them. You can't run on them.
Yes. Yep.
Cardinals, you can throw on them as well.
Yeah.
And then the Seahawks, which I would say you could throw on them as well, actually. And then the 49ers and the Bills, where it's a lot more.
Yeah, by the way, he still had a couple touchdowns. T. Higgins had a huge game. I know Ja'Marr Chase has been under 40 yards both games, but he's playing pretty much every snap and has 16 targets. So... mild concern on Burrow's upside. I still think he'll be at least a solid quarterback one. Chase and Higgins we're fine with. I don't think there's any reason for major panic here. And at this point, what are you going to do? You're going to trade Burrow for...
Here's my question.
Kirk Cousins. What are you doing?
Here's Anthony Richardson.
There
we go.
That's it.
If you drafted both of those players, who are you starting?
I'm starting Anthony Richardson.
Week three, assuming he's available.
That's a close call. Week three, if you have both of those guys. Yeah. I think I would give Burrow one more week. But I don't feel good about it.
Did you hear it in his voice?
Yeah, what's the dead cap if you cut Joe Burrow right now? Pretty astronomical.
That's tough, man.
Yeah, it is tough.
Here's what's hard. I have a trade request right now in Cowboys defense for Ja'Marr Chase, and I'm almost thinking about taking it because of how bad Ja'Marr Chase has been, and the Cowboys have been real.
Remember that one year when the Patriots defense was good for like 9 straight weeks? They were like legitimately being traded for people, Mike Evans.
That's a joke.
Like,
please don't trade Cowboys defense for Ja'Marr Chase. Don't do that. But Ja'Marr Chase has absolutely been disappointing. And I do want to say 2 weeks in, we said this a little bit last week. Fantasy is an emotional game. People do things that they shouldn't do. Go out and throw a trade request for Ja'Marr Chase if you want to, because people will make some decisions they probably shouldn't make.
Right.
But we're not panicking on Ja'Marr.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think both of these players by like week 8 will look much more like themselves. Mm-hmm. We're not super panicked on them. But I think it's worth noting they have been extremely disappointing out of the gates. And I often refrain to people, it's a lot more difficult to overcome a slow start in fantasy than a slow finish going into the playoffs. Because if you're like 7-3 and you limp your way into the playoffs, like you just got to get in and get hot at the right time.
Yep.
If you're 0-3 and all of a sudden you're like, crap, my team stinks and I'm, you know, dead last. Like it's just hard to overcome because the cards you have to play at that point are much, much fewer.
So who is it, Chase or Nakua this week? Who are you ranking higher?
Oh, that's going to be it.
Yeah. You laugh, but...
Like, I don't... It would shock nobody if Puka Nacua scores more fantasy points than Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, some weeks 1 and 2.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Josh Jacobs. He was really disappointing here this week. Mike, 9 carries, minus 2 rushing
yards. That's correct. You did not say that. Not 2 yards, negative
minus 2 rushing yards. Now, he did get some passing game work, which is what we like, but Josh Jacobs has
sort of saved
tough
him, yeah. For,
yeah, that's basically the only thing that saved him.
Let me ask you guys a question. Yeah. How many feet are in a yard?
3 point.
Okay. Three feet. Yeah. Just three. Okay. Oh yeah. So
you're right.
Josh Jacobs is listed on ESPN.com, I believe, as a 6'1", 6'2". I'm sorry. 5'10". Okay. So whatever. He's 5'10". If Josh Jacobs were to just run to the line of scrimmage and then just fall flat on his face and not even reach the ball out,
yes,
he would average more yards per carry than he's currently averaging right now.
Correct.
1.6 yards per carry. Now, some of that's obviously the offensive line, but goodness gracious, for a guy who led the NFL in rushing yards last year, Mike, what the heck has happened?
Yeah, it's been rough so far. By the way, to your point, did have over 10 fantasy points just from receiving, 5 for 51. So that's going to help a little bit. So he ended up with
9.9 because he went -2 as a runner.
That's right.
Minus so under 10 fantasy points for the day.
Yeah, so at least that happened. That gives you some sort of hope going forward. We know he's going to be a feature back and be on the field often in passing situations as well. You know, again, the rushing has been atrocious. I will say this, though. The Raiders only ran 39 team snaps. He played 29, that's 74%. So at least he's still playing a feature back role. That 39 team snaps, by the way, tied for fewest in a game over the last five seasons. So that is not sustainable. They're going to run a lot more plays. That was a ridiculous game. I mean,
39
offensive snaps is pretty much unheard of.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so the Jets played 47 yesterday. That was a ton.
That is low. Yeah, that is low as well, but 39 is almost unheard of. So again, there might be a week where they double that number. Right. Better days ahead for Josh Jacobs, but a slow start to the
season. No rush over 7 yards so far this year.
Gross.
Disgusting.
That's is, you know, we talked about the red flag when a guy has 300 plus carries. He led the NFL in touches last year. Oftentimes, you miss time, the efficiency drops. Greedy.
You talked about it, and you got a lot of heat for that take this offseason. You talked about it. You have been richly rewarded so far. No, I'm allowed to.
I mean, we talked about it.
No.
You're too nice to me. Well, I need to.
You led that charge.
Can we talk about something I got wrong here?
Let's sure.
Yeah, Javonte Williams is next. I was too high on him this week.
No, not quite next.
I need to humble myself right now.
Really quickly on Breece Hall. Breece Hall struggled here in week 2. This entire Jets team struggled in week 2.
Yeah.
You saw Breece Hall look fantastic in week 1 in limited action. Dalvin Cook looked awful here as well.
Did. He had -2 fantasy points. Breece Hall was the productive one with 0.9. Yeah.
That was tough.
They both looked terrible.
This was just like a game against the Cowboys defense. It feels like we're throwing it out. I'm just hoping for better days ahead.
We might legitimately have a great defense in that Cowboys defense. Like, that might be a legitimately like transcendent defense. But this just offense, like, I get it. Aaron Rodgers got hurt. He's a 4-time MVP. Mm-hmm. That's tough.
That offense with Zach Wilson doesn't look anything like.
What inspires confidence whatsoever with what they did?
No. Garrett Wilson had that long touchdown. Otherwise, complete disaster. Wilson in this game had 8 targets. He had 2 catches. Yeah. I'm like, we're right back where we were last year.
He should have had 2 touchdowns.
Where we were last year.
Oh, and again, right, the schedule does not let up for the next 2 weeks. They play the Patriots, who they're 0-2, but it ain't because of their defense. And then they play the Chiefs, who they've been better on defense than offense so far this year.
Again, same thing from the offseason. We talked about the NFC South across the board having maybe the 4 easiest schedules in the NFL. It's the AFC East that has the hardest schedule in the NFL this season. So it's going to be rough here for the Jets.
And the snap count did not increase enough.
No.
And the workload did not change enough that you're saying to yourself, hey, it wasn't productive, but at least he was the guy. No, it's still a backfield split. I'm very nervous here for the next couple of weeks.
And not even a split. Michael Carter was right there with them in terms of
snaps.
Well,
that might have been game flow, right? Like, you know, down.
He
so
was
big.
Mixed in throughout, though. I mean, even if you check during the game, he was involved. I think it was like right down the middle. All 3 of them were equal in snaps in like during the second quarter.
There are a lot of things. I said last week, I said the Jets' plan will be to go with Zach Wilson, but let's talk about it in a month.
Oof.
They should be talking about it right now.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I mean, again, there are only so many cards you can play. They're tight against the cap. They can't trade their first or second round pick next year because of the Aaron Rodgers deal. Mm-hmm. What do you do? I don't know. But man, this Jets season could go by the wayside in a hurry. They got to win on Sunday against the Patriots at home.
Gardner Minshew looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, but they can't trade him right now. The quarterback is getting hurt in Indianapolis.
I'm saying in a couple weeks, yeah.
All right, Field Yates, Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp here on Fantasy Focus, breaking down everything that happened here in week 2 from the Sunday slate. Mike, you talked about Javonte Williams taking on the Commanders. Yeah. Did not look fantastic here this week. What's your takeaway from this game?
Yeah, largest concern is he was out-snapped in this one. Samaje Perine played 31 snaps. Williams was at 28. Williams still dominated carries 12-1, but the pass routes is where we want Williams to shine. It was 23 for Perine, 12 for Williams. Mm. They were dominating this game, and then Washington came back, and then Perine was mixed in more often, ended up with 1 more target as well. The good news is Williams had 14 touches after 17 in week 1. That's a solid number. The fantasy production and touchdowns have not been there yet. and he has not been fully unleashed yet. You still have P. Ryan and Jaleel McLaughlin, who you mentioned on Sunday had a touchdown. He only played like three snaps, but
of course he comes in and scores a touchdown.
So I'm still optimistic about Williams going forward. A little bit of a setback here, though.
Here's what I would say. You and I went back and forth on Williams last week a little bit. And my bigger takeaway was not so much that Javonte Williams, his work share was so terrible, like the snap percentage, total opportunities. I just don't think he's physically right yet, which, duh, you're coming off of a major knee injury. Like, the explosive plays seem hard to come by right now for that entire offense, unless your name is Marvin Mims. But like, I just don't see that same explosion right now from Javonte Williams that I think allows him to reach that top 15 or so potential. It's going to be a while. It might be the entire season because that knee injury was so significant last year.
Yeah. By the way, Marvin Mims, huge game. Did you see played how many, like 15% of the snaps?
Like what? Was it like six snaps?
It ended up, I think, a little bit more than that by the end of the game. But I mean, they were like, hey, you had a huge play. Let's just go sit on the sideline for a few drives.
That was so frustrating.
That'll change soon.
It has to. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Damian Pierce Field taking on the Colts this week. And here's the hard stuff. Single digit fantasy outings each of the first 2 weeks. These Texans have been throwing the ball a ton. CJ Stroud has been slinging it out there rather than letting Damian Pierce be able to pound the rock.
Yeah, so I think there are times in which you can say like a bad offense is going to be hard for a running back to like actually thrive, but we've seen bad offenses lead to reasonable output or very good output from running backs. But you can't have a terrible offensive line and expect that player to thrive.
Yep.
The Texans yesterday were without Laremy Tunsil, Titus Howard, two of the highest paid tackles in the entire NFL, Juice Scruggs, their starting center, Kenyon Green, a starting guard. I mean, they are like left and right. Like Shaq Mason's like the only body left standing right now along that offensive line. I just think it's going to be really hard to expect any sort of efficiency, Mike. And because they actually have enough functional pieces in the passing game, I don't expect a significant role for Damian Pierce in that regard.
Yeah, and the larger concern might be playing time. Last year, he played over 50% of the snaps in every game except for week one. Remember the Rex Burkhead week one game? In weeks one and two, under 50% of the snaps in both games. Yeah. So he is dominating the touches, at least, relative to the other running backs, but it's not enough volume in the overall, and the efficiency has been atrocious. So he'll be a lot further down the rankings this week, probably more of a flex option. It's definitely concerning.
Guys, Kyle Pitts, through 2 weeks, it's tight end 29 with 5 fantasy points. What the heck am I supposed to do if I have Kyle Pitts in my roster in the tight end position?
Yeah, it might not be happening.
Like, are we at the spot where we're starting to have the conversation? Do I need to maybe look at the waiver wire rather than starting Kyle Pitts? And I want to be, I want to believe that Pitts is an option based on what I saw from Drake London. Like, we saw his other guy get in the end zone this week.
Yes. My answer is yes.
Yeah, I think he's a fine guy to keep on your bench, but it's hard to start him right now. He's not only is it that his target share is way down, it's down to 17% compared to much higher last year. He's fourth in line on the team. Drake London's ahead. Bijan Robinson is ahead. And Mac Collins, who scored a touchdown yesterday, is ahead as well. Look, if you're going to take these guys in the top 10 and not manufacture a ton of touches, I don't know what you're doing, but they're not doing it. And we just have to accept that they're running an efficient offense without these guys. It is what it is. They're 2-0. They have an easy schedule, as we talked about. Yeah. This might not change, unfortunately. Super frustrating.
I wonder if a change of scenery could be in store for Kyle Pitts at some point, though, in the future. Not this year, obviously, but like, is this an off-season discussion? Because if you're the fourth overall pick in the draft with elite athletic traits, don't you think you'd want a more prominent role?
Absolutely. And this is, we talked about this, I think, last week. This is why, especially if you're falling out of it in a dynasty league, trade for Kyle Pitts. He's only 22. Yeah. He might not break out till 25, but I still want him because at some point he's going to get that opportunity. And I think he's going to deliver. I still believe in the talent here.
Yeah, but in redraft, it's really tough right now.
And we often say, like, who are you going to find at tight end? There actually are a few names right now, like Jake Ferguson's playing a ton of snaps.
Sam LaPorta.
Luke Musgrave. Sam LaPorta. All rookie tight ends, incidentally. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Hunter Henry, I actually think he was still available in a bunch of leagues. I feel like he was on our best available tight ends. One.
Target share is not there yet for Henry, but he just keeps scoring touchdowns.
Okay, I'd rather have that than freaking Kyle Pitts.
Henry available in 65% of leagues.
Yeah, give me him over Kyle. But I'm just saying, I'm just throwing out names here, I take those guys over Kyle Pitts.
I hear you.
All right, let's talk about a few more injuries here. We talked about this field. Sucks. We got a bunch that we got to get into. Joe Burrow with the calf. We mentioned him a little bit earlier on in the show where we talked about him.
Let's just monitor this one here. Yep. Like the fact that he was getting treatment after the game and was like having it worked on the sidelines, like not ideal. You know, obviously this is the long game the Bengals are playing with Joe Burrow. They need him to be healthy for the next 7 years that he is under contract. At the same time, all these teams acknowledge that like, you never know how many shots at being elite you're going to have. So there's going to be this desire to have him on the field as soon as possible. But keep an eye on this one. In terms of depth charts, they have one of the thinnest backup quarterback depth charts in the entire NFL. So this could be a problem for them. But as of right now, the earliest indications do not suggest it's going to cost him time. But I'm a bit nervous.
It's Jake Browning's too right now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel great. Doesn't feel great.
Well, then
does that help your Jamar Chase shares?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Puka Nacua will be ranked above everybody.
Everybody at that point.
That's true.
If it's Jake Browning instead of Joe Burrow.
Saquon Barkley scored 27 fantasy points last night, but he did leave with an ankle injury, got rolled up on field.
Could have led the show with this one, to be honest with you, because a player that's been a star for multiple seasons in fantasy, obviously was tremendous last year. He left the game late, as you just said, Daniel. The Giants had an incredible comeback, and shout out to you, Daniel Jones. Just a remarkable game in the second half, especially.
Yeah.
Yep. But with Saquon, they play Thursday night in San Francisco. So I would say that you can basically count out Saquon Barkley for week three. The question becomes, how many weeks will he end up missing?
Yeah.
I just mentioned the Bengals have one of the thinnest depth charts in all of fantasy behind their quarterback. Well, all the real world. How about the Giants' backup running backs, Mike?
Yeah, so Barkley played 65 of 67 snaps in this game. So that shows you how they feel about the rest of their depth chart here. Matt Breida stepped in at the end there, played two snaps. You have Gary Brightwell, he's a bigger back. He plays some fullback. He could be mixing. Yeah, Eric Gray is a rookie who could get some run. Gray's probably the most interesting stash in case Barkley's out on IR or out for a month or something, which is possible. We'll see how it plays out. But they might,
Daniel Jones.
He's my favorite. Yeah,
but I was going to say, could they bring in like Kareem Hunt for a workout or something if he goes on IR? Because it really is that thin. Yeah.
I want to ask you this question. I drafted Kareem Hunt in a bunch of teams, and I've basically at this point throughout the first 2 weeks dropped him everywhere.
Fine.
Do we think that there's a chance where like how... Until we start seeing something, I've been wanting to make Kareem Hunt happen, and I'm like, guys, I got to stop.
No, what's the harm in dropping him right now? If you need the roster spot, there's nothing wrong with it. First of all, he hasn't been signed. Second of all, he has to get signed to a good spot. Third of all, if he's still signed right now,
were better than him. That was a good option.
If there are still if he's still not signed, it does tell you that the league doesn't view him as this surefire starter anymore. And if you watched him last season, Browns fans will tell you he was a decidedly different player in 2022 than he was in the prior seasons.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move ahead and talk about David Montgomery, who left yesterday's game with a thigh injury. Here's what I want to say about this. It was obvious to me the Lions want David Montgomery to be their lead back. Mm. They're not ready to give Jahmyr Gibbs 20 touches, right?
No.
And so if David Montgomery is likely, it sounds like he may miss some time here.
Yeah, he said a couple of weeks to reporters. And you know, he's not a doctor, but he certainly has a good feel for his own body. It sounds like he's unlikely for week three as well.
So we've been wanting to make Jahmyr Gibbs a thing. We haven't seen the volume yet, Mike. Is this an opportunity where, like, the Lions aren't going to have... It's going to be Craig Reynolds, and it's going to be Jahmyr Gibbs. Which one of those two guys are you giving the ball to more often than not?
Jahmyr Gibbs. I think it's going to happen now. To an extent. Is he going to get 22 carries in week three?
No. I don't think so.
Is he going to maybe get 12 to 14 carries? And he had 9 targets, which led the team this week.
That was good.
So
part of that was because Amon-Ra St. Brown got hurt and left for a while. They needed somebody.
He was in and out. That's fair. But still, he could have 5 targets and 12 to 14 carries.
Easy.
And that's RB2 at worst, probably at his skill level. RB1 behind this great offensive line. They play Atlanta. Not too scared of that. I know last week we were like, is Gibbs a lineup lock? And the answer was probably no, not yet, but close. You know, you could plug him in there. Now the answer is obviously yes. Okay, it's not going to be... I don't think Craig Reynolds is getting 20 carries and just stepping right in for David Montgomery. He played 10 snaps in this game. Gibbs ended up playing 31. So... I feel good about
it. Is possible, though, that Craig Reynolds plays the Tyler Algier role here in Detroit in the sense that even if Jahmyr Gibbs makes a big step forward in terms of usage over the next couple of weeks, fans are going to be clamped while David Montgomery is potentially out.
Yep.
We're going to be saying to ourselves, like, Why not Jahmyr Gibbs on every play? In the same way that when the Falcons had first and goal from the one yesterday and ran four plays, they had Bijan Robinson on the field for one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are upset with Bijan's production. He played over 80% of the snaps yesterday and was the number one scoring running back after the 1 o'clock games. And everyone's like, we need more. We need more Bijan.
That's correct. But that's the thing, Mike, is that like you're sitting there saying to yourself, doesn't he seem like he's capable of handling even more? And couldn't he be like potentially the runaway RB1 with even more utilization? Maybe not RB1 because Christian McCaffrey rules, and certainly Austin Eckler is great when he's on the field as well. And Bijan Robinson just so passes the eye test every time he has the football. Yeah. It's like absurd how good he is.
Yeah, man.
It is. But I don't know if it's just experience with the injuries at running backs playing fantasy for so long. I'm like, I'm okay. Take some plays off. I would rather have you for 17 games, not get injured
season.
Because you're playing every single snap. I'm okay. And same kind of thing with Gibbs. Like, I have him on a few teams. I'm okay if he has 13 to 15 carries and not 22 carries. I'm totally fine with that if he gets the passing down work as well.
If you are rostering David Montgomery, I would expect that you should start making some plans for another running back in your starting lineup, though. Even though he has not been ruled out yet, you just want to make sure that you are on top of that. All right, let's talk about Davante Adams as well. Left this game with a concussion.
We don't know. This one stinks, though.
So I thought it was a concussion.
The Raiders are down big late, 38 to 10. Davante Adams is on the field in the fourth quarter. Jimmy Garoppolo throws him a pass on like a post, one of those what we call hospital balls, right? Where it's you're basically setting up the receiver to just get crunched, and he gets crunched. Flag thrown into play on Taylor Rupp, unnecessary roughness. Davante clearly in pain. They bring him to the sideline. They do put the blue pop-up tent up, which at that point I think is kind of becoming a no-doubter when a player gets shaken up. Like, just immediately put the tent up and sort of evaluated him for a concussion, given the NFL sensitivity. After the game, they said that he would be evaluated for a concussion. So we don't know for sure.
Okay.
It's a shame when any player gets a concussion. It's a shame when a player gets hurt in general. It would really be a bummer, though, if a player was on the field, down four touchdowns, late in the fourth quarter, catching a pass or trying to catch a pass. It's so unnecessary.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yep.
What are you doing? I get it. You have to play, but like, get somebody else some reps there, man.
Well,
you got depth. He's your best player.
We did not have Jakobi Meyers for this game because he did have a concussion in week one. Hopefully, if there is anything that lingers with Davante Adams, and hopefully that doesn't happen, we would have him back for week three. That would be nice, but
honestly, way too early to tell. And obviously Meyers was excellent in week one. He'll be even more valuable ostensibly if Davante Adams is not available. So we're hoping that he was evaluated for concussion and did not have one. Mm-hmm. We obviously have no way of telling that right now, but a huge bummer. And if you were wondering whether anybody else would matter for the Raiders without Jakobi Meyers on the field, Hunter Renfro had one target yesterday.
Mm-hmm. One. We called that. Christian Wilkerson did outplay him.
Yeah.
Outsnap him. He filled in, and that's what we talked about in FF one Now yesterday.
Snap. No surprise. $16 million a year for one snap.
I was just going to ask you this question, Field. How does that happen? How does a team pay someone that much money and then decide, you know what, 2 years from now, we're not even going to throw the football to you?
I mean, they paid Darren Waller and then traded him less than a year later.
Darren Waller looked good last week, though. So
yeah, you know, it's tough. Like, I think they got in over their skis a little bit when they hired a new regime. Thought they were ready to compete in the AFC West because they had just made the playoffs the year before. They spent over $250 million. And think about some of those major investments. Darren Waller extension, gone. Hunter Renfro extension, barely plays.
Not used.
Chandler Jones, I mean, just a bizarre situation right now. I'm just hopeful for the best for everybody involved there because it's very, very strange. Davante Adams has been exceptional. But at some point, you know, the Raiders are 1-1. It's not like this season is anywhere close to over. But if this team is once again near the bottom of the AFC West, Davante Adams is great. But is that the kind of trade that you want to make? Like, the Dolphins trade for Tyreek Hill makes sense. They've been, you know, they made the playoffs last year and by all accounts are going to be in the thick of it again this season. The Davante Adams trade in sort of retrospect, it's not a bad trade, but it might be sort of like a misallocation of resources for a team that should have been more focused on kind of building things organically and slower.
Yeah, and by the way, this is a team that is serviceable offensively and not very good defensively. They're going to be throwing it a lot, and guys like Adams and Meyers, at the very least, if people are staying healthy, you hope they're on the field next week. They're both going to be starters. We know Meyers, after what we saw in week one, you start him, and Adams, his targets are actually down. Average 10.5 last year. He's a 9 and 8 through two games. little lower than we expected. Hopefully that we get a little uptick, but regardless, you're starting both guys.
I mean, the first drive was beautiful from the Raiders, though. They scored a touchdown. It was, yeah. Adams had a wonderful touchdown. It was like, dang, firing out of the gates fast.
All right, OBJ had an ankle injury in this one. John Harbaugh said after the game he's not that worried about it.
Yeah, sounds like nothing here, which is good. Which is left good. The game, but it was one of those where everybody on Twitter was like, oh, of course OBJ gets hurt. So just a reminder that while talented, you know, durability is going to be a question mark for OBJ.
Yeah, he had a slow week one. They kind of featured him right away. Yeah. The box score in the first quarter started to fill up, and then he disappeared. He ended up with 29 yards on four targets. But right out of the gate, first couple targets, you're like, all right, maybe here we go.
Yep.
Not so much. Zay Flowers, the clear start in Baltimore. I think he's the only receiver that's a lineup lock, right? Well, borderline lineup lock, we'll say, for Flowers, but OBJ, we're not starting right now, even if he's a go.
Yep. All right. We had a couple of guys that filled in for some injured players, A.J. Dillon being one of them, Mike filling in for Aaron Jones. I was hoping for a little bit more based on
good
how
or
well
bad? What do you
Green
want, the good
Day
or bad?
Played. Yeah.
You want the good, Mike?
I want the good.
Okay, take all the good.
Give it to it.
What was the good for A.J. Dillon?
Oh, the good was he played 68% of the snaps and had 16 touches, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Super inefficient. 55 rushing yards on 15 carries and one target, one catch, 8 yards. So just 7.3 fantasy points. This is a player who's had a couple of opportunities to smash in place of Aaron Jones, and candidly has not really smashed in many of those opportunities.
Yeah, check this out. Was looking at his game log going back the last couple of seasons last night.
Okay.
He's touchdown or bust more so than maybe anyone else. Under 10 fantasy points in 16 consecutive touchdownless games.
Wow.
So either he scores a touchdown and gets a double-digit fantasy points, or he doesn't score a touchdown and he's useless in fantasy. It's too bad. You know, it's a big year for him, and he had an opportunity here, and it wasn't great. So hopefully better days ahead.
Yeah. Joshua Kelly didn't really fare that much better in place of Austin Eckler this week either.
You know, the good or bad?
I'll take the good against the good? 78% of snaps, 13 carries. That's it.
Yeah. Only one target. It turns out that one player is super duper talented in Austin Eckler, and one player is not quite as talented in Josh Kelly.
How much of this, too, is this Josh Kelly or is this the Titans defense, or is it a little bit of both? Maybe both.
I mean, the Titans defense is definitely legit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we always talk about how fantasy is a byproduct of opportunity and talent. Mm-hmm. When the opportunity outweighs the talent, it can often provide some meh results. Uh-huh. And 3.9 fantasy points is quite meh for Josh Kelly.
Yeah, and they did flip back to more of a pass-centric offense. No surprise against Tennessee. We expected that. But yeah, just disappointing him. But I mean, that's a story for the Chargers, right? They just can't. The biggest underachieving franchise of the last decade. It's so disappointing. Mostly it's due to injuries, but this is a good team. They're on paper. They're so good. They should not be 0-2.
People asked me coming into this season why I didn't have the Chargers in the playoffs. And I didn't have a reason other than until they prove to me that they can make the playoffs, I'm not going to pick them to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which felt like kind of a crutch argument, but that's where we're at. They check every box on paper in terms of talent, and yet 0-2. And it's going to be a tough road ahead in the AFC.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. They got in last year, and then they had that ridiculous implosion against Jacksonville too. Oh, and they had a lot of guys out. So you look at that, you're like, all right, they were in last year. They're healthier now. They had these, you know, on paper, this should be a top 10, maybe a top 5 team. They just can't get the job done. I mean, should have beat the Titans.
Should have been.
Got to beat the Titans.
Could have, should have, would have.
All right, finishing up here on Fantasy Focus, Daniel Dopp, Mike Clay, and Field Yates. Guys, we have two Monday night football games. Some things to keep an eye on. One, Amari Cooper, likely going to be out for this game. Has he officially been ruled out yet, Field?
He has not officially been ruled out yet. That will not happen until about 6:45 tonight when the inactives for the second game are due, because we have that doubleheader, 7:15 and 8:15 kick.
That's right. I'm really excited about that. Also, George Pickens made it on the injury report, which I was
but
not
no
super
game status, though, there. So he should be good to go.
Should be good to go. What do you guys need as far as a Monday night miracle in any year matchups this week?
You want to go first?
Nothing. I'm dominating all my matchups.
Yeah, wow. Mike Clay.
I could use some Allen Robinson in the 16 team league. I could use a nice night from him and the Saints kicker, Blake Group. He's a new kicker for the Saints.
Yes.
I could use some of those.
Blake something.
Yeah, no, but I think the big storylines for this game tonight here on the Brown side, it's assuming Amari Cooper does not play. Does anybody step up in that Browns passing game? And does Deshaun Watson finally step up as a passer? He's been okay as a runner in his 7 starts with the Browns.
Yep.
We need elite passing performances. And then for the Steelers, like, Don't be the Giants through the first half of yesterday, right? The season started last week. Let's get things going tonight. Show up and look like the passing offense that scored 5 touchdowns on 5 drives during the preseason, even without Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, so assuming Cooper is out, we expect a lot of Deontay Peoples-Jones, and all these Elijah names. Moore. And Elijah Moore, yep. Of course, David Njoku, Nick Chubb. The guy I want to see, though, step up in a 3 job, make some plays.
Cedric Tillman,
third round rookie. Love that kid. I'm excited to see him.
Tennessee rookies, yeah. Jalen Hyatt looked great for the Giants yesterday when he played 12 snaps.
Same thing. Yeah, like Marvin Mims, you barely saw the field.
The other game, the Panthers are, you know, like not a whole lot there as far as fantasy is concerned. Like Miles Sanders should see significant volume, so I'm more concerned about the Saints tonight. And
that's it,
what
right?
I want to see is like, can the Chris Olave show continue? And we talked about how Jamal Williams is going to have value for 3 weeks until Alvin Kamara returned from suspension. This is a good spot for him tonight, I think. Mm-hmm. They should be able to play with a lead and should be able to run the ball against this Panthers defense. If he does not, like, I'm not sure he's usable next week in fantasy, even with one more week of Alvin Kamara not being
available. Yeah, I hope we get a look at Kendre Miller in this one. Maybe he gets an opportunity.
Yeah.
So did we do a board bet on Sanders and Jamal Williams? I think
we did not.
I did a board bet with
Field on Brian Robinson and Jamal Williams. So
I feel like we had one too.
Field, we have one on Kenny Pickett. I haven't gotten to yet. George Pickens.
George
Pickens. I'm so sorry, guys.
We had 2 board bets from this past week, I think it was.
We did, yeah. We'll get to them a little bit tomorrow, but what you need tonight is you need Jamal Williams to go off and find himself the end zone a handful of times.
So just
Brian Robinson.
Be the highest scoring running back in fantasy.
Basically, that's all Jamal Williams
with
needs
that
to
headshot,
do.
It's totally possible.
It's totally possible. And you and I had a George Pickens, I think it was wide receiver 34 or better, which means Pickens basically just needs to get in the end zone for me tonight.
So the only thing I will say that I don't think has been said enough so far during this podcast is that, like, you know, there are people that do things that are incredible in life, like, you know, ultra marathoners who run like 1,000 miles, people who, like, you know, Cal Ripken played every single day for like 15 years, whatever it was. But like, no one has acknowledged the fact that the three of us just made it through this 60-minute podcast in what might be the hottest studio in the history of ESPN.
It is so hot in here.
You're wearing a sweatshirt, so you're not. I don't care.
It's 60 degrees outside right now. It's cold and wet. I thought that wearing a sweatshirt was smart. It is a sauna in this room right now.
I played through cramping today is what I want you guys to know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm going to go chug several electrolyte-filled drinks right after this show.
Pedialyte, that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
great for the kids, too.
Hey, Pedialyte. Really quickly, let's call this game. Which one are you taking? Saints-Panthers.
Which game? I got the Saints.
I'll take the Saints.
I'm going to take the Saints, too. I can't take the Panthers. Yeah. All right, what about Browns and Steelers? I'm going to take the Browns.
You know, I'm on the Browns bandwagon for years here. Browns.
You know what? I will take the Steelers just to mix things up a little bit.
You know what? You did that last week, Field, and it worked out where you're like, we can't all take the Bills. I guess I'll take the Jets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than be good. All right, that's going to do it for us here. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Field and I talking with Stefania, recapping 2 Monday Night Football games, working our way through the waiver wire. We love you guys. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Don't forget to love each other. Be kind to yourself. You have earned it. And good luck here on Monday night. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Holy crap. Puka Nacua just caught another pass.
Again?
What? Another one.
Did you know that Al Ziegenfeld won $50,000 because of Puka Nacua?
Yeah, he did.
That's like it's a bad weekend for Al.
For Al.
I know. That's right. He's down. He's down this week.
No secret, not a mystery. The one that we depend on for all our podcast needs. Graduate, Full Sail, you, a Lions fan through and through. With the hippest beard, I'm telling you.